Hi and welcome to my favourite Elliot Smith song. If you haven't heard us before, this podcast is pretty simple really. We try to do our bit to keep Elliot Smith's legacy alive by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. And talking to us today is Ed Harcourt. Ed is a musician based over here in the UK who's released 6 studio albums as a solo artist, one of which was nominated for the Mercury Music Prize, and has written songs for lots of other artists as well, including the likes of Marianne Faithfull, Paloma Faith, and Sophie Ellis-Bextor. Ed also counts himself as a big Elliot Smith fan too. And in this episode, he talks to Elizabeth Woodstanley about his favourite song pick, Elliot Smith's enduring influence on songwriters, and we also talk about an Elliot cover he did as well. So without any further ado, here's Ed Harcourt talking to Elizabeth Woodstanley.
Hi there, my name is Ed Harcourt, and I am sitting in my studio, which is also known as The Wolf Cabin. The song that I've chosen is quite a famous one and a well-known track that you may have talked about, but it's called The Ballad of Big Nothing from Either Or, and it's the first Elliot Smith song that I heard. Well, I guess when it first came out, I would have been in my, 18, 19 maybe. And I just remember hearing it. And at the time I grew up listening to the Beatles. My mum had all of the original Beatles records. And so I've always been a huge fan of anything that's melodic. And as far as harmonic sequences, progressions, those classic kind of progression chord sequences, you know, I'm just a sucker for that. And I think the band Big Star as well, I was listening to Third Sister Lovers at the time, and it just the kind of everything, the stars aligned, and when that song came along, and it just completely floored me and got stuck under my skin. Elliot, you know, his music was, it just is in the same, it's weird. It's like in this, for me, it's in the same pantheon as the Beatles, but also Nirvana for some reason. Mm-hmm. It's got that, it's got the beauty and the sadness and the melody and harmony of the Beatles, but it's got this intensity and darkness that you'd find in something like Nirvana, you know.
Yeah, that's a great, it's a great combination of things. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and it's kind of something that I've always loved. You know, that's it speaks to me massively and lyrically. You know, I mean, his lyrics are so sometimes just so devastatingly sad, but there's an anger and there's an intensity in them, even though they're delivered in this beautiful, sweet, gorgeous voice. You know.
And so when you first started listening to the Ballad of Big Nothing and were kind of introduced to Either Or, did that get you really into listening to that album?
Yeah, and I just loved the way it sounded, quite lo-fi. It sounded like it was recorded in a basement of a house, and I was kind of like making records in the basement of a house, and it just sort of spoke to me. And I just remember the more I listened to it, the more I discovered sonically and musically, there's just so many hooks and little melodies all the time going throughout the song. I mean, on from a musical level. And then, you know, you kind of, I guess it would have been, I would have had it on CD, and you pull out the lyrics, you know, from on the album, in the inside of the album artwork. And you kind of, that's something that I used to just avidly do with everything that I listen to. You know, sometimes I'd read the lyrics first before I even listened to it, just to kind of, I don't know, just to kind of see if it read out well, you know, before I heard it. But I just, there's so much that's implied as well in the Ballad of Big Nothing that just makes you think, what the hell happened, you know? You're sitting around at home now, waiting for your brother to call. I
there's a lot of depth to the song and different ways that one can sort of interpret, you know, what he's saying that I think people are drawn to.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's the key aspect of a great songwriter is to somehow have a perspective that, that, you know, people can relate to but also haven't heard before, and but be an observer. And he's, you can see he's sort of taken all these things in, or perhaps they've happened to him, or he's observed them, and you know, there's something quite nihilistic about it and nonchalant in a way, which weirdly makes it more powerful. It's just, he's like, you know, he's saying, do you do what you want? You can do what you want to whenever you want to, you know, it doesn't mean a thing. It's like, oh God, it's like nothing matters. I'm just, you know, staring into the void a little bit, you know.
And the thing too about what you were saying is that kind of repetition of, you know, do you want to do whatever you want to? And then the echoing with the music.
It's weird. It's got this, it's very kind of downtrodden lyrically, but it's got this, there's almost a slight euphoria to it. And there's a slight sort of, but not, I don't mean it's triumphant or anything, but there's just something quite rousing about the track, but yet it's so sort of, it just feels like it's being trampled by life, you know? But yeah, that was kind of the song for me. And then after that, I dived into, you know, a few different records here and there. But obviously, you know, that I think that whole record, either or, is for me, like, and I love XO, but I think that record was the one that really stuck with me. It's pretty flawless, to be honest.
I've heard that you did a cover of The Ballad of Big Nothing.
I did a cover. I was on tour, and you know, when you're on tour, you're kind of traveling a lot, and obviously, and you're looking at your phone, and I noticed, oh my God, it's, yeah, and you know, I think it was the anniversary of his passing, and so I was kind of like, well, I should just do a cover tonight, and so I did a Ballad of Big Nothing. I think I was in Gothenburg, in Sweden, and I just decided to do it. It's quite nice to do that sometimes. Yeah, I just did it at the piano. I've got a version somewhere. I'll have to dig it out. It's definitely, luckily my sound man recorded it. He wasn't too stoned when he was doing my sound. He was stoned most of the time, but not then, thank God.
Yeah, we'd love to hear it. I as soon as you mentioned that, I could immediately kind of hear the way that you make music and you know, with the piano and what that might be like.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like, I definitely wouldn't, if I was going to cover it, I wouldn't do it on the guitar. You know, I would have to do it on the piano, I think. Otherwise, it'd be too similar. You know, I mean, my version doesn't even touch his version. It's just more just a tribute, really. It's there's something wonderful about when you do cover a great song, you know, you learn it and you kind of get into it properly and kind of go, oh wow, that's like such a cool little chord sequence, or you know, little turnaround, and it makes you appreciate it even more when you have to learn it, you know.
I'd like to talk a little bit about sort of your career, and I'm going to sort of bring in this element of time and then tie that back to Elliot Smith. You know, I've been listening to you, I guess, for 20 years now that I think about
it. Oh, no, I'm so old. I'm still here. Woo!
how much, you know, that so much time has passed.
I know.
Which is really interesting. And, you know, you've put out quite a few albums in the past 20 years. And, you know, the past couple albums you've released have been instrumental. So I wanted to hear about kind of, you know, the longevity of making music and, you know, kind of where you've gone and and why you've been intrigued with that change.
Well, you know, I've always loved cinematic film music, and I've always been a huge fan. You know, I'm a massive film buff, and I've done a few little films here and there, but done a few scores and stuff. But what happened, the reason why I did the first instrumental record, Beyond the End, I moved out here to the country from London with my family, and I'd made an album called Furnaces that came out on a major. And basically, it took me 3-4 years to sort of make this record. I made it with Flood, the producer. And it was a very kind of big, expansive, dark, epic record, quite rocky in places and a little bit different to some stuff that I'd done before. But basically, I kind of, you know, was left in the hands of this monolithic major label. And they just completely buried it and destroyed it. And it was a really weird time for me because I'd put so much effort into it and it just got taken away from me. And so I basically sort of fell into a bit of a odd space for about a year where I didn't write. And we'd moved out the country and I just kind of wrote for other people and just, but I just had no desire to write any lyrics. And then I had nothing to, I felt like I had nothing to say. And I think retrospectively, I guess I maybe was in some kind of, I don't know, like depressive state, you know. What happened was I needed a piano and I found one down in Cornwall and it was a baby grand and it was a Hopkinson baby grand from about 1915. And it's exactly the same make as the one that I learned to play on. So that belonged to my grandmother. So I went down there and checked it out and it was really out of tune and but I knew it was going to be great. And I got it transported back to my studio. I'm looking at it now actually. And then it was really bizarre because the Rich Machen, who's known as Soul Savers, has this label that was releasing instrumental music, and he asked me if I wanted to do a sort of very plaintive piano album, just instrumental. And it was bizarre because the only thing I'd started writing was this instrumental piano music. So it just again, you know, the stars aligned, and that was it. And then I decided to do a second one that was much more maximalist and huge in scope. And now I've written my next record, which I'm literally about to make in the next month, which is lyrics again and singing.
Sort of the one of the reasons why I'm asking is, you know, I think it's interesting in looking at Elliott Smith, and, you know, we only have a certain number of years with his music, but he did play for a while, and you know, the change from his first album Roman Candle to his last album that was released after he passed away, you know, you can hear a lot of kind of musical shifts. And although, you know, maybe not more subtle because he has had a shorter career than you had. But it's interesting to me to hear and sort of see the changes as a listener.
I know, and I just wish that he was still around for us to, you know, it's such a, it just feels like these geniuses are stolen from us, you know, and it seems very unfair, you know. I just wish that as well that people need to look out for people, you know. They need to. All these amazing creative artists who just fall by the wayside—it's really difficult, and it happens, and it's so common. You know, it's so common for—I don't know what it is. What is that? Where people just fall off the deep end, into the deep end, you know, and never come back. I don't know. I mean, everyone's kind of been there a little bit, but some people never come back from it, and I think we just need to look out for those, you know, geniuses that need caring for, you know.
just looping back. Looping back to
the man himself,
the Ballad of Big Nothing, and Elliot Smith.
You
know, I'm sure you're, as a musician, you're drawn to, you know, lots of different music. And, you know, we know from the podcast and speaking to musicians a lot that, you know, musicians are particularly drawn to Elliot Smith, just for, you know, how he put things together musically and that sort of harmony with the lyrics and the music that he so successfully did in all of his albums. So I don't know if you have anything else to touch upon in that area.
Well, what I would touch on is his, you know, his voice for me, the way he delivers his songs. There's nothing like it. I mean, the only person I can think of is like someone like Chet Baker, in the tone, in the way that he, I don't think anyone can, I don't know. It's almost like he's whispering in a way. It's so, and I think his influence is so huge on songwriters over the last few decades. It's you can't escape it. And I think it will be a huge influence for years to come. I mean, you can hear it in Phoebe Bridges, for example, who was the girl of the moment, you know, and she's brilliant. So I think I just would have loved to have met him. And I actually saw him in LA when I was on tour with Neil Finn in 2003. No, 2002. I saw him from afar and I was too nervous to go and say hello. But and then I think it was maybe a year later he sadly passed. But yeah, I don't know. You know, I think for me he's just absolutely fantastic songwriter above all, you know. But it's like just that rare thing, isn't it? That, you know, the songs and the voice, it's very hard to match in a way. I think we've touched on quite a lot about the man. I'm not I wouldn't class myself as an expert, but I'm a huge fan. And I'm just glad that he's left such an amazing legacy, but I'm sad that he's not around to, you know, enchant us with more incredible albums and songs. So I would have loved to have seen him live. That's definitely my one disappointment. But yeah. You know, I was playing his music this morning because I knew that we were going to talk, and I just wanted to kind of, I listened to him a lot, but I listened to it this morning before my son went to school, and my son's really into Nirvana and the Beatles as well, and he's into like Royal Blood and Beastie Boys, and he's nearly 10 years old. He's learning the drums and the guitar. And he'd never heard Elliot Smith's. And so I was playing it in the kitchen and his sort of ears pricked up and he was like, "What's this?" And I was like, "It's Elliot Smith. He's a really great singer-songwriter." And he was like, "I really like it. It's really good." So wow. That's that. We've got a new convert. Do what you want to, there's no one to stop you.
So thank you very much to Ed Harcourt for taking part in the podcast. We did play you a little bit of Ed's cover of The Ballad of Big Nothing, but stick around to the end of the episode and you can hear that in full. So just one more thing to mention before I go. We're going to do some more listener picks in this series, so please do get in touch if you want to be featured on the podcast. All you have to do is record a voice note telling us what your favourite Elliott Smith song is and send it to us at submissions@myfavoriteelliottsmithsong.com. Thanks again to Ed Harcourt, to Elizabeth Woodstanley, and thanks to you for listening to the show. And as promised, to play us out, here's Ed Harcourt playing The Ballad of Big Nothing.
Tired, not really though.